Welcome to the Nerd Party.
I'm Darren Moser.
I'm Philip Gilfus.
I'm Daniel Prue.
And this is City Alpha 3.
Hello and welcome to City Alpha 3, a Star Trek podcast here on the Nerd Party Network. I'm Darren Moser, joined again by my strandees beneath the planetary defense shield. Gentlemen, how are you on this new Star Trek day?
Jolan True, Darren.
I mean, you can say that, Philip, but don't say it to Daniel. He's sitting in the Romulans only part of our camp.
Yeah, I think it's weird that we have that section. I mean, it's just the three of us. Daniel, if you want alone time, you just have to ask.
Well, I'm just saying, I made a sign and everything. If you throw it on the ground, it's pretty disrespectful.
It's nice that it's printed in, you know, human standard as opposed to Romulan, like all the other people who are there.
I just assumed the TARDIS was translating it for us.
Oh, yes.
If you can read it, then you would know that you're not supposed to be there.
That's true. Maybe that makes more sense.
If you can already understand this, you're already in the wrong place.
Well, today we're going to be talking about Picard Episode 4, Absolute Candor, which was a very apt title and made a lot more sense after the episode, which, I mean, is how good titles are. But in this episode, Picard... did anyone else think we were going to be at Free Cloud this week? Guess not. We're not quite there
Spock
yet.
Spock Shuttle.
Spock Shuttle is continuing on, and we're not there yet. But I'm pretty sure next week we'll be making it. But no, we're going back to the planet Vashti, and we start with another flashback, but it's not the destruction of Mars this time, so they're shifting it up. But we get some more of Picard's backstory where he basically used this world as a hub to kind of transport a lot of the refugees. And so there's lots of Romulans here. It's very Frontier West town vibe going on. And there's this sect of Romulan warrior nuns, because that's a thing. Which is cool. And those are the Quo Malat. I know we got the Malat part right, but no, they are helping transition. And I liked this flashback scene because it was the most TNG we've kind of felt Picard, I feel, so far. Not in a bad way, like the other parts haven't been good, but this was him like in his element. Like he's, you know, helping people, and he's communicating, he's being the arbiter, he's being the go-between, you know, he's on safari in Egypt is what he kind of looks like, but...
It does Nigel Thorne very close.
It does. But it was really, really nice just seeing him interact with these people. They obviously have respect for him, and later we'll see the contrast of that, you know, when he returns several years later. But Daniel, what did you think about this detour off to this planet, or at least just the flashback of what we saw of Picard during that evacuation time?
It was good. I liked it. It was funny. I laughed at the part when they were talking about how Picard doesn't like kids. And
right in front of the child.
Yeah, and the line was, oh god, I can't remember now, but the line was really good, really smartly written, about
unpredictable, chaotic, something like that.
Yeah, but then I can't remember what he said. He says something, or she says something about not having the children and blah 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 blah, and me and my girlfriend look at each other and we're like, yeah, that sounds about right. Yeah,
he dislikes displays of emotion and he's not overtly fond of children. Yeah. Don't make the Admiral uncomfortable.
It was good to see. Yeah, and then, of course, Picard pushed back a little bit on it, obviously, and we get that relationship, which we'll get into.
That little Papa Picard
right,
kind of
later, but,
kind of feel.
I like it. I'm curious why this planet seems pretty nice. It's got a real big tree in the background, like giant, like a tree of life kind of tree, and I'm wondering why this couldn't be like a new Romulus, maybe, but maybe there's something wrong with it. I don't know. Maybe it's small or something. Maybe it's just not big enough.
It doesn't have a twin planet.
Seem pretty happy. We haven't talked about the Reemans at all. So.
How can we subjugate our twin planet if there's no twin planet, Daniel?
That's a fair point.
But, Philip, what did you think of this new planet, this new culture that we were exposed to?
Well, when
to?
The episode started, I thought I had accidentally put on Firefly. We were starting in the studio.
It did have a very Firefly vibe, yes.
But, yeah, as you said, and I was thinking about this, and I mean this question in-universe. I don't mean it like I'm complaining about the writing or the acting. In-universe, I thought JL, as we're calling him, right, was acting a little bit out of character with Elrond, or Eldon, excuse me.
Elnor.
Which, I mean, like I said, in-universe, so because he seemed very comfortable with him. And, I mean, I know in some ways that obviously the bond he's created, or he's trying to create, with the Romulan refugees, you know, sort of reminiscent of Ben and the Bajorans, with the bond he created with that people.
True.
And culture. And I feel like Picard has sort of opened himself up to this mission wholeheartedly. And so he's really trying to get involved. And so that reaching out to this boy, I think, is interesting. But of course, I mean, I'm going to read too deep into it. So his, you know, his mission is to get these people where they're supposed to be, and there's this kid who he can't get. Yet, you know, my mission is to get this kid somewhere. Now, this is the temporary place for now, and so I feel kind of bad about it because I haven't done my mission. I mean, even though he's like a person, and so I guess he's, and then also his state of mind. And again, you have to read a lot into it, and that's where I'm going. You know, because this is, of course, post. You know, this isn't, you know, mid TNG Picard. You know, this is several movies
right. It's been some time.
You know, Renee's dead, and you know all these things that have happened. And so, you know, he's not as hardcore about his children's stance as he may have been in years past.
No, I was thinking that as well, where the events that we've seen him gone through, whether it be, you know, with his assistant in charge of Radishes and just, you know, all the experiences he's had so far, I think they've slowly curbed that sharp edge against children. I mean, not to the full extent, but, you know, because it's obviously still a thing. But I didn't feel like it was weird that Picard had this attachment to this boy. You know, that seemed natural, especially as they, you know, connect over sword fighting and other things. And you know, he seemed like a delightful little boy, very inquisitive. And then, you know, as the flashback ends, it ends with him receiving a communique that, what do you mean, synths have attacked Mars? Dun, dun, dun!
Which, and again, this is not necessary, I suppose, but so the way they presented this timeline, and, you know, presumably he's, I don't know where this planet is, but presumably not near Earth, or, you know, or the solar system, but, you know,
probably closer to Romulus.
Yeah, but in Children of Mars, it's almost like instantaneous, and then we get Admiral Picard's quote on the Chiron of, you know, space CNN, you know, that, man, this is really bad what happened. And so it was like, how fast did that quote get there?
Oh, that's true.
So,
well, you know, that's a short trek. It's loose cannon at best.
Are you saying that there's not eggs in the NCC 1701 for the entire voyage of that ship? Okay, we'll talk about it.
Yeah, so then we're back to present time, I guess the main story. And we're on our, it was like La Sierna. And what did that stand for again, Daniel?
Oh, Siren. The Siren.
The Siren. Okay. That's way easier to say. But so we're on the Siren. You know, we get a little more interplay of our characters, and we're reading, you know, tragic sense of life. Apparently, we're really depressed.
That's a good question. I was wondering that as
also,
well.
Also, was that the same book he was reading before? Because he just started it in this episode. He must be either rereading it or... Because I'm like, dude, start in the middle, actor. Don't just start in the...
Yeah, I'm not sure if it was a real book. But yeah, it's... So we're, you know, we're going along, and then we get to Picard in his study. He's not back on Earth. Ha, got you guys. He's actually on the holodeck. And we have the emergency hospitality hologram.
Oh,
we have lots of different holograms.
I love that. This is such a stupid idea, but it's not. And I love it. And I'm on board.
It's so
for whatever,
fun.
Whatever. It's emergency blank hologram.
I hope they keep this up for so long. It's awesome.
I want an episode where, like, they all sit together around a round table. There's, like, 12 of them. And, you know, and they're all dressed differently. And it's like, here's the emergency tactical hologram and the emergency hospitality hologram. But he's serving the others, like, drinks and stuff.
Their
and,
clothes
oh,
get
man.
Torn.
Keep
There's the
going.
Emergency tailor hologram.
Keep it going. Keep it going. Why have a generalized hologram when you can have hyper-focused specialty holograms? The, oh, man.
And
at least they're all played by the same
actor.
The
hospitality hologram is the worst one because he hates that one.
Well, and he says he doesn't get to be used very often.
You know?
So
you know, I like, you know, like that actor's probably like, you know what? I've seen Orphan Black. I could do that. I can be a bunch of different characters. Come on.
Pretty much. So everyone's kind of debating about being rerouted to, you know, to the planet, to Vashti.
So can I throw out a few of these things for the character
moments?
Yeah, go
moments? For it.
Because, you know, I thought, you know, it was a very character-y episode, other than, you know, once you get to the planet and a little more action-y. But,
That's pretty much all Picard, but yeah.
So, we've talked to Rios and his holograms, like Jem. One thing, well, also, how long until we see someone reading a book on a pad, by the way? Like, everyone uses paper books, really? But anyway, moving on. That wasn't my point. My point is, so I was thinking this, you know, of course I have to bring up something negative. But Agnes, you know, as a character, I thought was interesting. But in this episode, Cadet Tilly seems to have wandered into this episode instead and played that role. She was just sort of doing the, like, nerdy, twee, awkward. Am I supposed to be in this meeting? Let's go.
She's on an adventure.
Like, but like,
she packed her bags like Bilbo Baggins and is off on her adventure. No, which is, I don't think it's a bad thing. I like her kind of optimism, outside, objective look at the situation. But that's kind of what we've been given so far.
Yeah, I just thought that she was being a little Tilly, and I was like, come on now, you're like the chief Federation scientist of AI, like, you don't be a little more grown up.
Said she doesn't leave Earth very often,
yeah,
so this may be kind of a new experience for her.
Yeah, I feel that. Well, kind of like we had with Hoshi, it was a little bit like that, where she was a little fish out of water. I mean, she's expressed that, you know, I mean, what she was talking about, like, space is so space, and if it's not space, it's the space between space, and it's like, you haven't been in orbit in a while, have you? Like, you can tell. But that's, again, it's nice that that's something different in the character, as opposed to, you know, space travel's just another day at the office. You know, it's a little something, there's some wonder with her, which is kind of nice.
And I also love, and it kind of happened during the staff meeting in the chateau, but I've been throughout the episode, of how much JL is aware, obviously, that he's not the captain, but he has to fight the urges.
But he's pretty much the captain.
Yeah, I know. She's like, oh, what, did he just say, set course, and you just did it? He's like, I assumed he knew what was going on.
Yeah, he knew the risks, yeah. And everyone's like, well, again, it's Admiral, former Admiral Picard, you know, of course everyone's going to kind of defer to him. And we get a hint drop on a bunch of raiders and smuggler warlords with an old 23rd century bird of prey. Wonderful, see that in this episode. Don't know, guys. Yeah. We'll have to find out.
Well, I was also interested how much kind of what I'll say, quote unquote, world building there was that, not a criticism, just a statement, that was not followed up on. Now, of course, you know, you can introduce something and then follow it up in an episode or two later, but like, the whole, like, there was the something rangers, I didn't quite catch the term, that were supposed to have controlled that part of the galaxy, but then they've gotten pushed out.
Yeah, there was a lot of names thrown around.
So,
yeah.
Which I guess is,
which I just took it as he thought it was more stable, but it's not. And that's revealed later in the episode. Like, I didn't feel like I needed to memorize every name that was coming up. I felt like it was more just painting the picture on the situation. But I know what you're saying, though. It's a lot to take in. But we learn about the Way of Absolute Candor, where our episode title comes from, which is basically everyone just speaks their mind and no filter between brain and
Romulan
mouth, I
warrior
guess.
Sisters, as Agnes says, that's a thing.
And apparently that's a really cool thing, although I don't think we ever see any of them actually fight. It's all the son, it's all the boy.
Well, they do mention, and it's something to point out, that that does seem pretty counterculture to what we understand about the Romulans. But I guess this does seem to be like some tiny sect or like outsider group.
They were already here. This is not Romulus. This is away from the heart of the Empire.
Right, but I get the understanding that this group has existed before. This is not something that they've done new.
But it's, no, that's true.
But it's just like something that you wouldn't expect Romulans to do. And they point that on the episode when they're like, you know, it's from their brain to their mouth. They say exactly what they're thinking. There's no filter. Unlike
which
most
is very anti-Romulans.
Yeah, unlike most of Romulans. So that's interesting.
Well, I think this whole mission of, you know, it makes me think like, on Earth, you know, it would be like the nuns or, you know, Catholic nuns. Or it would be like, you know, who would be the most responsible for this mission of mercy of, you know, whereas standard Romulan culture has been, you know, which we can talk to about the rest of this episode. But like, you know, we don't want your help. We don't need your help. We can do it on our own. There's not a problem. There is no global warming. I mean, exploding supernova. You know, it's all that stuff.
So Picard beams down, but it is not the wayward Western town he remembers. It's a little harsher. He's like, Jolan True. And it's like, you sound like such a foreigner right now.
The Romulan stops playing the organ in the saloon. Contact. You know.
Yeah, pretty much. and then we meet grown-up Elnor, and he's there.
Yes, and Moody.
So now we're going to cut to our favorite part of the plot, back on the artifact, the Borg cube.
I've seen a few tweets about this, about this being boring, and I'm like, it's not boring. I mean,
I know. The problem is we know we're going to get the payoff way later, whereas all the Picard stuff is on the front.
Well, I mean, for me, that's always my caveat for me. Am I interested in a romantic storyline? No, but I'm never interested in a romantic storyline. But this isn't for me. There are people who this is for, and it's not me, and that's fine.
You would call this a romantic storyline? Oh, wait, are you talking about the brother and sister?
No, geez, no.
Yeah.
No.
I would not classify this as a romantic storyline. Mm-hmm. I mean, even like, because it's not romantic. I mean, he doesn't like her.
Well,
the good looking
does
people storyline.
But does he?
No. I mean, maybe they'll go down that road for like an episode, but it's not the core of what's going on. Hey, you know, I will say this, and I'll give the writers credit for having a little bit of restraint, because when he comes over and he's like, I'm going to teach you a Borg, what does he say? A Borg
ritual.
Yeah. I was like, you better not do something really stupid with the Borg right now. And fortunately, they don't. And they just, they're just,
it's just sliding with socks on down the tunnel.
I was thinking, hopefully they have socks in it. You don't want to take your, you know, that barefoot on a Borg cube. That's
how the nanoprobes get you.
Shower shoe situation there.
Shower shoe. But yeah, so we're learning more and more about the destroyer, and basically, you know, she's going to be like 1,000 people are going to rise up and cast off their shackles and follow the destroyer. It's like, what does that sound like?
I mean, the only thing I was thinking during that whole sort of backstory explanation was Romulan Ragnarok.
It's basically Romulan Ragnarok. And he also plants the seed in her mind of doubt, where he says, I looked up the ship you left, Earth on, and no one in the manifest doesn't list you there, but she has the memory of being
there. Which, by the way, guys, this is just, I'm married, I'm almost 40, I get it. Just a little thing to throw out there for the young guys and girls. Probably not during a makeout session would that be an appropriate time to question, before or after. Not during.
It did feel Romulan, though. It did feel very like almost.
It's like, when she's vulnerable, drop this truth bomb and make her doubt herself.
It was almost Romulan flirty, like you kind of call out a lie, sort of a thing. I thought that was actually more flirtatious than a lot of the stuff that they did. Even more so than the
slip and slide,
scooting around on the socks. You know, here's my problem, right? The story so far that we understand it, I'm on board with it. I think like the stakes are appropriate, like all the Romulan stuff and the Borg stuff, and we don't know where it's going to go. But every time they hit me with this stupid destroyer of all life in the sentient universe, I'm just like, my eyes glaze over. I'm like, this is so dumb. Why do they have to do this? Why does it's always got to be the end of the entire universe? It can't just be.
You already had a supernova, guys. That's pretty. pretty big.
And they saw seven signals of destroyers. And
yeah. Oh, jeez.
It's not that bad, but it is still frustrating.
Well, but I will say, I will grant you, the sister character is terrible.
Well, we're not supposed to like her.
No, no, no.
We're supposed to empathize slightly with
literally the character is terrible. Like, I don't know what we're trying to do, writers. It's terrible. Because, A, she acts illogically. Now, you know, of course, characters aren't always supposed to act illogically because then, you know, where's the fun, I suppose. But it has to make sense at some... Because, in other words, if I'm getting what she's saying, it's that, you know what, Narek, you know, you're terrible. Why? If I was in your shoes, I'd just punch her in the face. And that's how you get the information. I'm like, yeah, and she would kill you. What are you doing?
Well, and she's the failed one of the duo. Her plan failed so far, whereas his is not.
Her plan was kill the boyfriend and grab the android and then ... profit? I mean, I don't... What are you...
Yeah.
Nepotism, by the way. You should never send two twins to do one job. It's not going to work well.
Matrix.
So...
not like this.
All right, so Picard is chatting with the sisters, and he's also talking with Elnor.
Well, the one sister.
Well, and I also like the little line of, like, don't make promises, because a promise is like a jail. It's a prison. And then he's like, oh, well, I forgot that promises were prisons when I brought you this special treat. He's like, oh, no, 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 no. I mean, again, it's great exposition, but we all see it. It's like, okay, we know this guy's going to join your crew, and he's going to be a great sword fighter, and he's going to be your mutt. Like, let's keep going, because you've sold us on it. Let's, you know, we're good.
Can I just pause you for a second, and I'm trying to remember from the episode, and I'm blanking on it. But, I mean, the answer can just be because, and that's a fine answer. I'm willing to go with it. But what is Picard's reason for needing this character? I mean, not necessarily it's Elnor specifically, but I need my Worf. You know, what's his...
He goes through that whole conversation, I mean, twice, really. He does it once with the lady and then once with... Elrond Hubbard.
He just needs a young, strong person.
Basically, he needs a warrior class in his party, and that's it.
And he's like, I'm older. I haven't.
Okay, now we have to go through it.
As young as I used to be.
Who do we have? We have Rogue, right? Like, Captain, maybe? Would that be kind of real?
Captain's got to be Rogue.
Yeah. You have the cleric of the scientist, right? Is that what... Would that be?
Yeah.
What's Rizzo? I mean, I guess she would be... Or she is. She's also kind of a...
I don't know.
They don't really have a mage, do they?
Not yet. No. Hey, could be seven.
Oh, that's true.
We don't know.
Okay, all right.
So he approaches him and formally asks him to join his cause. Talks about Data, talks about, you know, you learn more about that he knew about Data, and, you know, I'd heard stories about Spot. But at the end,
Spot,
he's like, nope.
That was a great call out. Yeah,
that's a good call out. So at the end, he's like, nope. You still left.
Screw
you,
Dad.
My dad. Yeah.
And I get this is just because, like you were mentioning earlier, Darren, get to it. We know he's going to join the cause. This part felt rushed for me, which is fine. I actually it didn't bother me that much, but just the fact that he's all moody and he's like, this guy read you a book when you were like six, man. He was there for a weekend. Why are you so miserable, Adam? Like, this is silly.
Well, no, I got the impression that that was one of several visits Picard
maybe
had.
Okay, you saw him four times,
but that
when
was
you were six.
But that was the last visit,
right?
Because after that,
he's had,
you know,
no other male influence.
There's plenty of men Romulans there.
Picard's ready to Picard's ready to leave, but the Romulan ship, the old bird of whatever, is coming down. So we got to hurry. And then Picard decides to draw a line in the sand at that moment and start patronizing the watering hole.
Literally and figuratively.
And, I mean, again, he, like, I get what he's saying, but it's like, dude, you really don't have any place to say any of this right now.
What was your guess of motivation? And I don't believe this, but
I mean, he feels bad about what happened, obviously.
I mean, for doing a sit-in. Like, I mean, it almost seems like, which this is like the only time in the world like a white man has done a sit-in, but that's what it was. It seems like if I was a more, and I'm not, if I was more cynical, I would think, like, he's doing the long plan. Like, I know Elnor's going to show up. I'm just going to put myself in trouble. And here, you know, I don't think that's what it was. But there's a cynical part of me that thinks, like, that's the whole reason. But, like, what do you think? Like, so he's, you know, he hasn't gotten what he came for. He's very frustrated. He's about to leave. And what's he going to be like, you know what? Before I leave, I'm going to F some shit up. You know, I mean, like, was that, what's going through his.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
I definitely don't think he was just betting that Elroy was going to save him. I think that
his boy Elroy.
I think that this was
Elnor.
I think this was his way of taking some responsibility, kind of saying, you know, I see how bad things are, and I'm not, you know, I'm going to do what I can, because he obviously knows it's going to lead to confrontation, and it does. And I think.
And everyone else has good points, too, where they're like, we didn't really want anything, and you promised, and you didn't deliver.
Yeah.
And he's like, you're right.
Yeah, I think he was just I think he was accepting the situation head-on, regardless of what happened at that point.
And I guess...
Which is a man of good character.
I was frustrated. Yeah, I thought it was very Picardian, you know. Though, still, at its heart, I do... Still, I'm going to think about why he did it. Like, what was the motivation? I mean, the end, the larger picture, I can get it. But, like, anyway. But one thing, again, with...
Well, okay, I would think this way. He knows he's dying.
That's true.
He's probably not going to pass this way again. Mm-hmm. This is his only chance to say, I'm sorry. And that's really what he does. Like, he even kind of mentions
that. Like, creating a spectacle.
When they're, you know...
Well, it's not like these people are going to accept if he just walks up and says, "Hey guys,
well,
I'm sorry."
The cutting the head off doesn't help.
And we get an interesting dialogue from the senator, from the ex-Romulan senator.
Ish. I mean, to me, and again, this is my problem with illogical characters, and I go back all the way to like the admiral in the second or third episode. You know, so the senator, it says, you know, we believed you, blah blah blah, and that's great. And then what does he say? Something like, oh, we should have, you know, not listened to you, and we should have realized that we could have done it ourselves. And I'm like, yeah, that wouldn't have worked out for you. You'd be dead. I mean, there's no rationality.
Right. You can't, I mean, yes, everything didn't go as planned, but it doesn't mean they shouldn't have attempted to try to solve it.
It would have been, and again, it's a short scene, so I get you can't go this in depth. Because if we're going to use a more familiar thing of this, you know, America first, right? I'm not going to go too much into this, but as a metaphor, I mean, you know, America first. But it's because
see, wearing a Make Romulus Great Again hat.
Well, in as much as that, you know, if you have a generation or two separated from, like, you know, there was this big sacrifice that people have done, and then generations later, it's like, you know what? We didn't need any help. We could have done it ourselves. We could use Germany. Right.
But he's not even separated.
Yeah.
He's the
first
generation.
And that doesn't make any sense. Like, you could use, you know, Germany in the early 20th century, where it's like, you know, oh, World War I, and screw Europe, and we'll do it ourselves, and blah, blah, and that's the rise of fascism. But, you know, having the actual person who was there and saw it be like, we could have done it. I'm like, you were there. I think you know you couldn't have, but I don't know.
Well, I think too that his anger is kind of justified in a way, because he sees, and he says that he sees Picard as an arbiter of the Federation, and Picard does come in, makes all these promises, and then the next thing they know, it's no longer happening.
It's not Picard's fault, but he is the representation of the Federation who did let
and where
them
was
down.
Everyone especially else though? People. You know, I don't hear the Klingons doing any helping hands. I don't see the end. You know, I mean, so.
Well, Picard himself, though, but that's why he this was his project, this was his thing, and it failed for whatever reason. It's not logical, sure, I'm sure, but you know, when your planet blows up and a bunch of your friends die, and this guy comes in, tells you, "Hey, I can make everything better," it makes sense, at least from his point of view, to be upset at Picard.
And I like how they do kind of talk about just that refugee mentality of, like, you know. Yeah, Romulans are a proud people. That, like, nobody wants to be removed from their home and lose everything. And he's looking for someone to blame because it's a terrible situation, and he has no power. And that's when people react often.
But the former senator, you know who he should blame? Maybe he can find a piece of transparent glass and look into it. The Romulan government. I mean. You learn that the super, you know, it's called, and I know the Romulan government. I mean, it's in the comics, but I think we can all know they did nothing about it. They kept it secret. They, right. You know, that's who to, you know. So it's, I don't, I yeah. get JL's guilt throughout this whole series, but you got to put away that, you know, lash or whatever against his back that he keeps hitting himself with. Because at the end of the day, people do have to take responsibility for their own actions, as Spock would say.
Yeah.
I do think we learn in this episode the one thing that Picard regrets, and they called him on it, I think, twice. Yes. I think the senator does, and then the lady does, about just giving up. Like, yeah, when Starfleet just quit, you stopped. And he's like, yeah, I did. I could, like, even if I did one tiny ship at a time, whatever, he just gave up and just went home.
Yeah.
And I think he
feels
bad
has to live with that.
I think he feels guilty about that.
The enemy, was it the good is the enemy of the perfect, or whatever that saying is?
Yeah, exactly.
Perfect.
Yep.
Oh,
yeah.
The good.
Yeah. So the Romulan challenges him to a sword fight, and he doesn't want to fight. Again, I feel like they played the scene very well. Like, it could have easily been written poorly, but I feel like Picard, you know, wasn't just jumping on the other guy's sword and just killing himself, but he also was like, I don't want to fight you. Like, he does, you know, I don't want to, like, that's not why I'm here. That's not my intent. And then, of course, you know, Elnor comes through and he's like, make
Elmo?
A good choice, brother. It's like, did make a good choice. And then he cuts his, Elnor cuts his head off and he be dead. So, and then we get Picard and him back up to the ship as we're about to fight the
mystery.
I
do like that. And you know, it had to have happened season one TNG, just off screen. We never saw it. The same conversation with Worf. Like, basically, Elnor got the Worf promise of, I'll tell you when to beat someone up. You don't beat someone up. I'll tell you when to beat someone up.
I did. It was that was a very good righteous indignation, Picard. Mm. That felt very TNG.
Right.
Whole
yeah, where he's like, dude, you like can't just be killing people. It's like it's basically Terminator 2, where he's like, put the gun down. It's like, don't kill people. Only if I tell you to. I mean, that's basically what he does.
Also, what do you all think? Because I know I was going to say the episode addressed it, but in a way it didn't. The whole concept, because we think about it as kind of cool, the whole Elnor with the sword. But is it?
Yeah.
You know, I know at the end where you have like, well, your sword can't do this disruptor. And then they just beam out. And I'm like, that's going to be a thing. We're in the 25th century. Yeah. I don't know how well swords are in the age of disruptors, transporters, phasers, rifles.
So I'm very of two minds of this. And I've thought a lot about it.
I know Klingons, but.
I was going
to
say.
Don't bring a sword to a disruptor fight, basically, is what you're saying.
There's always swords in Star Trek. It's been a thing. I mean, batleths are super cool, and they also would be super ineffective in any sort of fight where there's a disruptor. So it's like, it really depends on how much. Like, in this scenario, it makes sense because this was a battle for honor, and they were doing it hand to hand, and there wasn't anybody else involved. If it's like if he runs into a room and starts like Jedi deflecting. all the disruptor fire, then I'll be like, okay, this is pushing it a little too far. But
if he's always on the high ground, you know.
So what we learned, though, is that the requirement for someone binding their sword to your cause is that the cause is a lost cause, which does not bode well for the rest of the crew. But guys, before we get to the battle scene, we got to go back to the artifact. And back on the artifact, here's Rizzo's... I'll sum this up. But yeah, basically, brother, sister, fun. They hate each other.
Don't say that.
Let's see. They want to kill them all. They basically need her to lead them back to the. But here's the thing: as I'm like, they're assuming there's a lot more of them. Like you could see the assumptions they're making, and we're like, we don't know that. All we know is that there were two.
Well, they might know that though. Because they knew that both of these two ladies were synths.
True.
So they may have information that we
I still feel like that's kind of a... I mean, you might be right, but I get the impression that they're... Oh, man, well, if there's two of them, there's got to be a nest of them. Let's have her leave. Like, I feel like they're jumping that conclusion.
I don't get that sense at all. I get the sense that they know very well, like, they probably have...
They just don't know where they are.
Because they knew where these two girls
were. They wouldn't know where Maddox is.
And they sent two people to go get them. They know, they just don't know where Maddox is, and probably whoever is helping him, so...
So is Maddox the Davros of the synths? Davros?
Well, I was just thinking, because they introduced this concept in this episode, and I think it's, you know, it's 50-50. I can tell you my point of view, but I completely could be wrong. But, like, were these synths, the girls, the sisters, the women, were they sent to where they were on a specific purpose? So, you know, in other words, why is she on this Borg ship? There must be something up, you know, of what she's going to do.
Right. Because the sister
Daystrom.
Was almost to the Daystrom
right.
Institute.
Now, my thought, and maybe this is just more, you know, with Data and everything, I just assume they just sort of did their own thing. But I guess that's probably dumb of me because, again, as Narek tries to say, introduce, you didn't come here on, you know, like you were on the passage
right.
and you weren't on the list.
She has false memories of everything leading up to her being on this Borg cube.
But they have to have illusion of free will, of course.
It's a really weird thing, too, because we don't know why.
Maddox obviously sent them both on a mission.
Right.
And a lot of their memory and or past is false.
But why?
Yeah, I guess that's what we'll find
out. Again,
we
don't know.
Because now his Daystrom mission failed.
Well, probably because I think part of it has to do with the fact that they both believe that they're human.
Wouldn't they be able to still act equally human even if they knew that they weren't? Because there's going to be a moment, promise you, there's going to be a scene in this show where the lady learns that she is a synth, and now she's got to wrestle with the idea of, oh, what am I? What does it mean to be a synth? And then, of course, she's still going to act like a human. She's still going
to
act like she
clutching
acts.
To her necklace.
Yeah. But, I don't know.
All right, so back in orbit of Vashti, we have the cool battle with the bird of prey, and obviously got to fly too close to the ship, but also not. You have the tactical hologram.
Is he speaking Spanish right now?
I think
he's like Spanish,
really?
Yeah.
I thought he's more like Slavic.
He's like Don Quixote.
I thought he's like Slavic.
Yeah. I didn't
he's more like Russian or something. Was.
He activates Emmett, a hologram for tactical emergencies.
He sort of has seemed like he had like a bottle of vodka and was like, well, Slav, let's go this way.
Well, he's got like he's got like a big old beard, long hair.
Tattoos.
He looks like a tattooed, messy-haired version. He speaks Spanish.
He looks like, what's his face from Iron Man 2?
Oh.
Oh, yeah. Yes. Mickey Rourke.
I want the
pretty much. I want my bird of prey. So they're flying, and then right as they're about to get blown up, an unidentified ship suddenly enters and just smokes the bird of prey, like cuts off its wing. But it gets damaged, takes a critical hit. So we beam them aboard, and it's 7 of 9.
Who Picard knows.
Picard owes her a ship.
Apparently.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
That was a difficult conversation I had to have with my girlfriend because she's like, "Who's that?" And I'm like, "Well, that's 7 of 9. She's from Voyager." Blah blah blah.
Well,
she's
failed,
like, how
Daniel.
She goes, "How does she know Picard?" I'm like, "Well, technically, we don't know that she knows Picard yet, but we assume that they know each other from."
She recognized him on site and says, "You owe me a ship."
Right.
So
we
assume that they've had interactions, and that's also not surprise since he is also technically amongst the people who were assimilated and aren't anymore.
They go to
club.
The X-Borg Con.
They got the special X-Borg Con. They have the special handshake.
You just put your hand out and go.
Yeah, you hear the little whisper. So, it's 7 of 9, and he owes her a ship, and then she collapses on the deck.
That's how characters enter dramatically.
Are all our crew together? Do we have everybody? I feel like we have everybody.
Maybe too many
for this adventure. So, and we did get a little teaser, obviously, for next episode on Free Cloud, where apparently you have to dress up like you're going on a bad holodeck program.
It's going to be terrible, guys. It's going to be terrible.
Oh,
it's going to be fun. It's going to
be
fun.
I think it looks great. And I hope it's going to be fun because you know what? They're taking a staple of TNG and they're using. I was so worried we were going to miss out on this kind of stuff when they did this.
Like where they dress up and go on the holodeck or something like
awesome.
That. Yeah,
this is going to be cool.
Stardust City Rag. I'm pretty sure that's the episode where they go to Free Cloud, guys. Just pretty sure.
It's It's going to be great.
I did have a question that I didn't think I understood, because it seemed like, and who was this? Was this Rios or Picard? That, like, you know, they're having the battle with the bird of prey. Things aren't going well. They're like, oh, fly closer to the shields. And, like, and they were going to, like, dive into the shields. And I was like, I think, like, they have a plan, but I'm not sure what it is. But I'm sure it'll be cool.
Well, my thought was the closer, if you get close, the problem is they were, like, a certain distance away from the shield where the shield defense was shooting at them, but not the bird of prey. So if they go closer and the bird of prey has to get closer, now at least the shield is shooting at both
because
of them.
Because Rios said he can't, I think he that, can't, out, or what was it? He can't move faster than him, but he could outmaneuver them.
Yeah. So I felt like they were being pinched between the shield defense and the bird of prey, and they were like, we need to basically be on the other side of this where we're pinching the bird of prey between the two. But yeah, I mean, yeah, again, it was a bit of a plan. It was very quick. So
how much of a plan? What percentage of a plan do you have?
Like 20% of a plan. I'm pretty sure.
I did like seeing the bird of prey. I thought it was very
nice. That was cool.
Look, if the Federation can use Miranda vessels, can we really complain?
Nah. Do they? Because I haven't seen one in any of those giant fleets. But yeah, no, it's yeah, that was cool though, and I felt it felt powerful, like the way they made the sound effects and shot it. Like you didn't want to get hit by one of those blasts square on. You were like toast.
So, Darren, I have a question for you. You're our ship guy, right? The Siren, I know, but.
Let me just consult my Discovery technical manual over here. Oh, wait.
But what kind of ship, I mean, like, the purpose. What kind of ship is the Siren? Like, what's it for? Like, what's it in its real design?
You know what it kind of reminds me of is the Valjean, Chakotay's ship from the very beginning of Voyager, where it's kind of like a marauder. Like, it has, you know, enough for a small crew. It's pretty well armed. It's very maneuverable, but it's not like a long term, you know, deep discovery vessel.
Just
because
Seven's
like
on,
that.
You've got to mention.
Oh man!
No, I'm just saying. Oh, you know what I'm talking about, though. Like a Maquis Raider, but a little smaller, a little sleeker, not designed in the '90s, basically.
Because I was trying to pay a little more attention to, like, the shots now. Because that bridge is like, but, you said, is a multifunctional room. You used to have the controls up front and this huge backspace to it, which is like the pool. Yeah. I don't know, but it's something. Well,
and what I want to know is, again, like, what was this originally for? Because all these different holographic whatevers apparently were pre-installed, and it's like, so what was this for? Like, is that, like, did...
There's a hospitality suite?
At checkout, did he just, like, select all modules when he was at checkout? And he was just like, okay, I need hospitality, I need this, I need that, I need that. I mean, it obviously kind of sounds like it's designed for... Well, it kind of also reminds me of the Raven.
Right.
You know, where...
Just because Seven's there.
It can be run... Well, but I'm saying it can be run by a minimal crew. And we see it represented by less by a advanced computer and more by independent hologram subsystems, which I think is more fun. But it definitely feels like it's set up for, okay, it's the captain and maybe one other, and everything else can be run by the hologram, by the ship. That's where I'm going
for. Will the ship?
I think we'll learn more and more.
Will the ship last the whole season?
Pretty sure. I don't see it
until the Enterprise
destroyed.
Comes in to save the day.
The Enterprise was F.
Oh yeah. Oh, is that guys? Is that how season one's going to end? We're getting hailed by a Starfleet vessel. NCC 1701 credits roll.
It's the exact same scene.
Exactly.
They show the same panel and everything.
And then we see them like coming nose to nose. But of course, the Siren is way closer to us because it's, you know, not even close in size.
I do like the idea that the chateau is going to be the ready room. I really hope they keep
guys.
Going.
We
because it's not
the
as
set,
quarters.
We're gonna use it.
Yeah.
No, it's not. Which I'm totally fine with, but Because it's not his quarters. Yeah. It's like the holodeck.
They're having a conversation with, you know, he's having a conversation with the hologram, and he's like, we tried to build this to your exact specifications. It's clear that this is going to be used.
And he talked to his Romulan butler.
Yeah, he sent up the schematics.
Yep,
and
it's Romulan butler.
Hey. Look, it's down to the last detail. You can see the blood there from the Romulan taxi before we beamed up.
We haven't seen holographic number one yet, though, so we'll have to see.
Butler!
I have a question for you guys.
Yeah, I was just thinking of
it. When did you know it was Seven? Did you not know until she beamed over? Because it was, to me, it was pretty obvious when they're like, beam him over. Yes, let's beam that man over.
They're so gendered.
He's coming on his way now. Man. And I'm like, wait a minute. This is weird.
I mean, yeah, maybe right in that last moment, but I was just kind of going along for the ride. Like, I wasn't feeling like, oh, is Seven going to show up in this episode? Well, I'm just like, she'll show up when she shows up.
It helps the beginning episode where the credits say, and also Jerry Ryan. So,
I didn't see that.
Oh, yeah, I didn't catch that either. And this one was directed.
That's too bad.
This one was also directed by Jonathan Frakes. Our good friend, who I think is also directing next week.
I haven't seen an episode title yet, unless you're Googling Spider.
Next week is Stardust City Rag.
Oh, really? Okay. That's true.
And it's...
I think it's subtitled, the one that Phillips hates.
But yeah, this is also directed by Jonathan Frakes.
Guys, you just know the cosplay that this episode will create, all right? We all know. We all know what's going to happen here.
So as of next week, we'll be halfway through the season.
Is there a break or no?
I don't believe so.
This is.
I don't think they're going to do
that. This
is
episode five?
We just finished four.
But I mean, there's only 10, right?
Okay. Right. That's what I said. So next week
halftime
will be halftime.
It doesn't feel like halfway, does it? It doesn't feel like, we know enough. Maybe next week will be a linchpin episode and we'll learn a lot.
I feel like we're going to either see Maddox or get a lot more on where Maddox is and what's going on next week. I feel like next week's going to be that turning point where now we know what we need to do for the rest of the season kind of point.
Yeah, I guess
that's my guess. All right. Well, Philip, what was your favorite moment from Absolute Candor?
It was good. Good episode. Start with the highlight. And I just think it seems that almost every episode, and I get it, this is the theme of the whole series, but it's a little much for me. Everyone's angry at Jean-Luc, no matter who you are. Starfleet's angry at him. Romulans are angry at him. You know, his butler and maid are angry at him. You know, number one probably doesn't like him either. You know, everyone's angry at Picard, and I get it. You know, he's supposed to be our central character who has been, you know, used up by life and is, you know, brooding. But I'm like, I need a cheerleader. I need someone who likes Jean-Luc to show up. Because everyone else is mad at him.
Rios likes him, and Agnes likes him.
That's true. Rios doesn't show it, though. He reads books at him.
I think Rios really likes Picard. I think he's trying to hold.
Are we going to have that scene the next episode where Jean-Luc's kind of still wandering the ship, doesn't know his way, and he opens up the door, and it's the room filled with posters of him? And, like, autograph pictures and memorabilia, and he's like, we'll never talk about that.
All right. And did you have a favorite part, Daniel, of this episode?
I really, really did enjoy the Romulan Warbird, even though it's an old ship.
Bird of Prey.
nice to see it updated, even though it's, it's probably like 150 years old at this point, huh? But that was great. I liked the And of course, seeing all the Romulan stuff is good for me. So I'm enjoying it. I'm on board for the ride. So, and I'm excited. I'm excited about Seven. I really am excited to see how she fits in.
I wouldn't expect her to be through all the other episodes, but I think we're going to get her for an episode or two.
I hope they establish an interesting relationship with her and Picard. And I hope we get to see. And I hope she name drops some people. Name drop Janeway or the Doctor.
Oh yeah!
Something.
Drop those names.
I want to hear it. I want.
Well, my husband Chakotay.
Oh, no. He's home with the kids.
It could happen. It could happen.
One character moment that they have left hanging, which is fine. You know, you don't have to show everything. But that I thought or hoped Agnes would have followed up on. I mean, obviously Rios has something that happened. That's why he's reading, depressing existential literature, and so Instead of being like the, well, that killed the conversation, it could have been like, oh, what happened? And no.
I mean, they don't know each other that well.
She has time to kill.
Walked up, yeah, I guess. I wouldn't. I don't blame her for trying to avoid that subject.
And just doing that killed the conversation.
I would have. I wouldn't have been like, so tell me, what happened in your life that makes you feel so meaningless? Uh-huh. No, no thanks.
And the holograms, what's the deal with that? No one's going to ask?
All right, well, Philip, if someone wanted to find you and talk to you about why Stardust City Rag is going to be the best episode ever, where will
they find
you?
I mean, it's my favorite band from the 70s, but they can find me on Twitter at NCPublicServant.
And Daniel, if someone wanted to talk to you about what other old 150-year-old starship should be showing up in Picard, where would they find you?
They could find me on Twitter. That's at OneUpDan, the number one, not the word, as in... any of these old Romulan ships. Come on. Oh, well, there's lots of other stuff you could do,
the
too.
The Botany Bay. Oh, no.
How cool would it be if we had, like, the old Romulan warbirds like we saw, or bird, whatever they're called, like we saw in this episode, but then, like, their base was an old, like, warbird, like the next-gen era, like the big old behemoth. That would be kind of cool. And if someone wanted to talk to me about why swords are never going to beat your blaster, they can find me at Twitter, Twitch, or Instagram under username Dr. Sci-Fi, DrSciFi. I'm Darren Moser.
I'm Philip Gilfus.
I'm Daniel Prue.
Stranded here under the planetary defense shield on City Alpha 3.